This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This is normally a Swedish podcast, but for this episode, I decided to do the podcast in English. The meaning with the podcast is to boost women all ages and understand that we all go through different paths in life. No one has a perfect life. I met Rachel Braithen in Thailand. She's also known as Yoga Girl and has over 1.2 million followers in the social media, which she inspires every day. It was pretty challenging to do the podcast in English, especially when you're nervous. It makes you stumble in your words and sometimes the questions don't come out as you want. But you know, it's fine. I did it. I challenged myself and hope you do it too someday. So how was Rachel's life before she became known? How can she feel so pleasant with life after all she's gone through? She seems to be so happy, but what is it that makes her happy? Is it the fact that she found love, or that she lives in Aruba, or is it the yoga all the way? And how many people is actually behind Yoga Girl?
We had a lot of issues in my family growing up, like a ton of, drama and divorce after divorce. There used to be times where I couldn't talk about this, like my stepdad dying and my mom trying to kill herself, all those things, like without crying or without closing up. It was really, really emotional. And now, I realized too that the more I speak of it, the more I help other people too, because these are things that people don't like to share. I was just determined to be the most destructive person ever. There was a part of me that really wanted to be happy, and I never had that ever. Hey, I'm a yoga teacher, I also drink, and I like to eat chocolate some days, and I'm not always happy, and I'm a regular human being that tries my best every day. And then I woke up in the middle of the night, like hours later, I think, and Dennis was crying by my bed, and he never cries. So, they told me the next day, but I knew that whole time, I knew. I haven't shown my whole side of who I am, and I think it's important that I do that. If you weren't fearful, what would you do?
So, welcome to this podcast. It's called the Urechede Podden. It's actually a Swedish podcast. But since you have so many international followers, I thought that you need to inspire them as well. So that's why we're doing this in English.
Yay!
So first I need to ask you, what is like your name? How do you pronounce your name? Because there's so many, I heard like Rachel, Rachel, Rotien. What can we just set this clear? What is your name?
So in English, it's Rachel Braithen. And I've been Rachel almost my entire life, but in Swedish it's actually pronounced Rakel with a K, so not with a CH. Okay.
And your last name?
Last name in Swedish is Brotien. Yeah. So I think I was 10 or 11 when I started calling myself Rachel instead of Rakel because we traveled so much when I was little, and my dad always called me Rach, even since I was a kid. And then our Swedish last name is extremely difficult to pronounce in the rest of the world.
Yeah.
So now I'm Rachel Braithen with the whole world. But my last name is actually Schoneveld now.
Oh, wow.
Because my husband has this extremely unpronounceable Dutch last name now that I'm married. But
so what was it again?
Schoneveld.
Rachel Brathen Schoneveld.
Yeah, no one can pronounce it. So don't worry.
So, so are you going to use that a lot? Or
I mean, not for...
How is it spelled?
It's S-C-H-O-N-E-V-E-L-D. It means clean fields. Uh-huh. It's actually, like in Dutch, it's a really pretty last name.
It is, it is.
He said if it gets too confusing, we'll just call ourselves the Clean Fields.
Oh my gosh, yeah, wow. And I thought my last name was hard to pronounce.
Yeah, how do you pronounce it?
Well, in Swedish, it's Kovacs.
Kovacs, that's what I thought.
But because my parents are from Hungary, so it's Kovac.
Kovac. But that's not so hard.
Yeah, but when I was younger, everyone made fun of me.
No.
It was like, cool vax.
No.
Like, cow vax.
Wax.
So, yeah. But you are from Sweden, and maybe everyone doesn't know that, or do they know it?
I think by now they do. Mm-hmm. Before, I never used to write about it, and everything I do is in English. So it was like a year and a half ago, Sweden figured out that I was Swedish, and everybody got really excited.
Yeah, me too. I'm like, proud of you being Swedish. I'm like, yay! So are you proud of being Swedish?
Yes, of course I am. Very, very.
Good, good. So you had a very destructive life, as I can read in your book and as everyone else can read. So I'm doing a little recap of your life, and then we're going to talk more about it. A lot of people know about you, but maybe some people don't know deeper about you. So you had a pretty destructive life until you were like 18, because then you moved over here. But before that, your mom got enough and sent you to a retreat in Dalarna in Sweden.
In Dalarna, yeah.
And you kind of fell in love with yoga.
Well, I didn't find yoga right away. So the retreat was more meditation oriented. There was no yoga involved, physical yoga involved at all. But it was definitely my first kind of door opener to a new type of living.
And then you traveled to Costa Rica, mm-hmm. then moved there. You traveled to Aruba, found love there.
Found love there, yes.
And then you started to teach yoga, and then some years after, you are now inspiring 1.2 million people every day with your yoga and your way of living life. And you just
Crazy.
Released a book.
Yeah.
When did you release it in Swedish?
In Swedish, it came out in November. Okay. And then in the States, in the US, it's going to come out in English in the end of March. So almost.
Yeah. I read it. It's really good.
Thank you.
It's kind of a thick book though, because when I got it, I was like, oh, I didn't think it was this thick, but it's so many nice pictures and recipes and a lot of good information that like catches you. So I like started to read it and read it through for like an hour.
Oh,
and then I was like, okay,
great.
I'm done. So it's a nice book. So you should be really proud
Thank
of it.
Thank you. The English version is going to be a little bit different. There's actually more text in the English
oh,
version.
Really?
In Sweden, they were worried I was writing too much.
Oh.
And in the US, they wanted me to write more and more. So I actually have elaborated some chapters. And
okay.
So I'm excited for that release. It's a little bit deeper than some of the Swedish
what
chapters.
Did you add? Can you tell that?
Yeah, I mean, I can. I went a little bit deeper into my childhood and some questions that I hadn't gone too deep in Swedish, which was really nice. I mean, a lot of people, they think that I've had this life my entire, you know, since I was growing up, that everything's always easy and yoga and healthy living, but it wasn't always like that. So I like to show the difficult parts as well.
Do you have someone helping you to get, you know, deeper inside of your emotions and when you're writing?
No, I do that really well on my own.
Good. But there's someone, you know, correcting.
Well, they have, yeah, I mean, they have the editors at the publishing house mm-hmm. that do that. But it's funny because in the States, everything is really serious, and then I wrote a lot of many kind of serious experiences, and they had to ask for every single page, is this okay, does this person know that you're writing this, could they sue us? And I'm like, no, I don't think my mom is going to sue me for writing these things. But
yeah, they're very
very strict.
Okay, so we meet in Thailand in Koh Samui, and beautiful. When I got there, I thought I like died and came to heaven. But what are you doing here?
I'm leading a retreat here together with my husband, Dennis. It starts in three or four days. And we have a week of, there's almost 50 people joining us here
Wow.
for a week of yoga twice a day and then healthy foods and beach time and some adventures. And
how long do you need to book that in advance?
It depends. So now usually these weeks they sell out within 20 minutes or something.
Wow.
So it's kind of first like come, first serve these days.
Faster than Swedish House Mafia in Stockholm.
Well, they have to take a few more people than 50 to their shows. But yeah, I mean, it's exciting. People really, really want to come along. And it's a pretty intense week. We go deeply into not just the physical aspect of yoga, but it's a very emotional and kind of heart-opening week as well.
So it's different kind of people from everywhere, from everywhere,
from really everywhere, and all kinds of ages, and we get beginners and advanced people in the same groups, and it's really always an eclectic group.
What's the oldest?
Wow, we've had some people in their 70s join. I think that might be the oldest, like around 75. But really, really fit people combined with maybe younger people that aren't as advanced, you mm-hmm. know. So it usually. It's always challenging to teach a class to fit everybody's needs perfectly, but yoga is designed in that way that, you know, you adapt your own practice to how you're feeling that day.
So, okay, let's go back a little bit in time, like 3-4 years, the time before you started to realize that this is something big going on. Or when did you realize that? Like, when did you start your Instagram account, for example?
Instagram account? I don't know, like 2.5-3 years ago, something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Do you remember your first picture?
I think it's of my dog, of our dog, Sergeant Pepper. He just passed away, but I'm pretty sure. Like in the beginning, that's all I shared was just pictures of him. Pretty much. But it was really, I had a Facebook page that I used for my students to keep track of just classes and if there was a change or something. And then people started following and I had a few thousand followers on there and they started asking me questions about poses or questions about the practice. And I started elaborating a little bit more there. And then Instagram came along, which I thought was super fun, just more images and less words. And then, it was really personal in the beginning. It wasn't just yoga stuff. And then that started growing, and then I posted just yoga stuff. And then it was one of my first big realizations that social media is kind of, it can be great and a really great tool, but it's also really messed up
yeah.
in many different ways. And it's so important how you portray yourself in social media. It's not the full picture. And I really used in the beginning Instagram with only yoga and only health and maybe some food. And I really chose only the perfect stuff, you know. And then one day I was out and I was having kind of a bad day. And then I had a tequila shot with dinner together with my husband, which we do sometimes. I mean, we drink and we like wine and all that stuff. And then I shared that on Instagram, you know, having a night with my husband. And I got hate mail from all over the world. People
wow.
were so upset, extremely upset. Like, how can you call yourself a yoga teacher and you drink tequila? Like, this is crap. People were really calling me horrible, horrible things. And I realized, like, wow, you know, I haven't shown my whole side of who I am. And I think it's important that I do that. So I lost a bunch of followers and I said, hey, you know, I'm a yoga teacher. I also drink and I like to eat chocolate some days and I'm not always happy. And, you know, I'm a regular human being that tries my best every day.
Yeah.
And then exactly. from that moment on, I started sharing more of the real life.
Which I think people appreciate.
Yeah. I mean,
definitely.
Now, I think it's a huge part of why my following grew so big so quickly, because it's not fake, you know,
yeah.
it's good and bad.
But when did you realize, or what did you think when you got so many new followers? You're like 500 new, or I don't even know, 1,000 new. Like, what did you think?
I wasn't really thinking. I thought it was exciting and fun and people wanted to, you know, take part in the journey and they were always really positive and I wasn't really reading too much into it at the time. I mean, now it's totally crazy. I mean, 1.2 million people, it's insane.
How many new do you get every day?
2,000 to 3,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm excited if I get like 4. I'm like, yay! Like, I reached out to 4 people. Amazing. Wow.
Yeah.
But do you read all the comments and
I
everything?
Do.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I do.
That must take like 3 hours in the morning.
No, I mean, it doesn't. I kind of scroll through them quickly. And if there's arguments or something negative, I like to kind of weed out the bad people.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people attack each other in the comment feeds. And there's like, you know, like I shared a video the other day of my little sister.
I saw that.
Yeah, she's really young and she's singing. And I mean, she's so talented. And then all these people that are like, you know, I am a professional singer and this is the worst I've ever heard. And I'm like, how can you write this to a 17-year-old girl? Like, what's
wow.
wrong with you? So I'm like, delete.
Yes.
You know, which
But can you block people as well?
Mm-hmm, I can.
You've done it.
I do now all the time. Yeah.
Oh,
all the time.
You don't want
to. I didn't used to. I used to think that it's, you know, I'll keep everyone on here and just try to manage the conversations a little bit in the feeds. But then I realized some people are just absolutely insane and they just want people to hate on each other. And that just creates a really bad vibe. So even nice people that want to protect someone become really vicious and it pulls out really negative things. So then I realized it's better to just block them. You know?
Yeah. So now you're known as Yoga Girl for like the whole world. I just met on the way here two Swedish guys and they're like, oh, what are you going to do here? And I'm like, I'm just here for the day and then I'm flying back to Hua Hin. And they're like, what are you going to do? And I said, I'm interviewing a girl named Rachel, which is known as Yoga Girl. They're like, yeah, we heard of her. Two boys, you know, and they were very like fashionable and they were so fun. So
that's great.
So and you're known. But as you said, your life hasn't been perfect. And I don't even know, should we use perfect? I'm more like questioning, should perfect as a word be used?
I mean, there's perfection in everything, but I think that's the beauty of life, that it's not perfect, and that's what makes it perfect. But I think especially, I mean, if you go to any person's social media feed, just a regular person, if it's a celebrity or a regular, you know, whoever, you always want to show your best side, right? So you always choose the best angles, you always put the best filters, you only share the exciting parts of your life. You don't share lying in bed watching Desperate Housewives eating a toast, you know, like no one does that.
Which is the best,
yeah, but no one really shares that because that doesn't look exciting for anyone. So if you look at a person's feed, they have always the perfect life and so many people travel all the time and they work out every day and they only eat healthy things and they're always beautiful and always makeup and, you know, and then it's not real. Like no one has that life. No one, not even, you know, like Beyonce.
No.
Beyonce like photoshops her Instagram pictures. Like it's insane. So not even Beyonce is happy looking like Beyonce. She's like the queen of the world. You
that
know?
Makes so me sad.
It is. It's super sad. But it means also it's just everybody's human. And I think every time you share something human, even if it's insecurities or, I don't know, stuff that you normally wouldn't share with maybe 1 million people or 100 people or whatever you have, it inspires other people to be real too, you know.
Definitely.
I think it's really important to share that.
So when I read your book, to be honest, I'm like shocked that you're sitting here and are alive and sitting here with such an open mind, actually, because it seemed that you had like a lot of anger and pain as a young girl.
A lot.
Tell us about that.
I think it's kind of, it's not out of the norm, you know. I think it's very common that young girls feel that.
Yeah,
you feel
but
insecure.
They don't talk about it.
But they don't talk about it, yeah. You feel insecure, you feel insufficient, you feel ugly or fat or unintelligent and everything people tell you, you really absorb, you know. So having a few people in your life maybe, I don't know, sharing negative things or, I've had comments from like family, friends, like, oh, when I was 14, oh, Rachel, better be careful with those desserts. You know, you don't want to end up like growing up and losing your figure. 14 years old, you know, you don't even have a figure yet. And I remember being that young and really going home and like, oh my God, like, is this what fat means? Like, am I fat? And I started writing down, I had a little diary and I would write down every single day, everything I ate. And then at the top, I would put weight 53.1 kilos, which is like, in pounds, what is that? Like 90 pounds. I don't even know. It's nothing. And then I would write down, I ate one grapefruit. I drank one cup of green tea. I had one toast. And I found this years later and it just totally broke my heart. Like, how can you be a child and that young? And that's your main, you know, that's what you focus on instead of, you know, playing or being a kid or growing up or.
Yeah. Having fun with your friends.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was really a big part of kind of my own insecurities, really. And then, we had a lot of issues in my family growing up, like a ton of, I mean, drama and divorce after divorce. And I have a lot of sisters and brothers that are half siblings.
How many siblings do you have?
I actually have 5, but there's another one coming, which is insane.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Let's see about that. I mean, it's great. And, you know, my dad's really happy, but it's really hard for me to be. I'm going to be 27 this year and then have a little brother. For me, it's a little. But it's who my family is. It really, like the drama hasn't really ended and it probably will never end. And it's just who we are.
Yeah.
But for me, when I was that young, I really took that and I made it into something really horrible. Like instead of kind of learning from it and going with the flow and realizing that these are my cards. Like, this is, I have a crazy mom and a crazy dad and a bunch of sisters and brothers, and everybody divorces all the time. It's just what it is. And now it's kind of nice. Like, we have this huge, crazy family. But at that time, I was upset about everything, you know, and instead of talking about it or kind of using it for something useful, I started smoking and I started drinking and I started hanging out with really bad people, and I was kind of going down this path.
How did you meet these people?
I was just determined to be the most destructive person ever.
Did you want to make your parents worried or attention or?
Probably both, I'm sure. I mean, I was like 13 the first time I was in the hospital with alcohol poisoning.
Wow.
And I think about it now, like, I have sisters that are 13 now, and it's like, no, like, it's not possible. Like, you're so young, like, it's not possible. But it was.
I mean, that's, what did your mom and dad say?
Oh, it was horrible. They kept thinking all the way through until I was at least like 15 that, no, you know, Rachel's such a good girl. Because I always had really good grades. Like, school was always super easy for me, so I never neglected that. But it definitely wasn't good.
Because in your book, you said also, like, you made up of these lies, and, you know, while you were smoking, you're like, no, my friend smoked.
I mean, every day was like one lie into the next, really, about everything, who I was with and what I was doing. And I would sneak out, jump out of the window and go party in the middle of the night on school nights. And then no one really kept track of what was happening. And I've been really determined, like, if I want to do something, I'll do it. And they tried really hard to control me and to stop all the kind of bad things I was doing. But I was the only one who could do that in the end.
In your book, you're writing about your stepdad. He died in an airplane crash.
Yeah, when I was little.
Wow.
I mean, he was a combat pilot for the Swedish army. So it wasn't like a tourist, like a charter plane or anything like that. It was just him. But it was really my mom's, like, the love of her life. It was a couple of, like, 2 months before their wedding. They were engaged. Really, really, really horrible. And she was the same age that I am now when that happened, and I was 5. My little brother was 3. So it was really, I don't think she's over it.
No, of course not.
I mean, I don't think you ever.
I don't even know.
I don't think you ever get over that. I mean, I imagining that now with my husband, like, it's not an option, you know. How do you live through that?
And she didn't want to live through it.
No, she didn't want to live through it, no. And it's something that's affected us, like, my entire family. But I think mostly me, because I was the oldest. My little brother doesn't remember a lot. He was really young, and I helped him through a lot, even though I was so little. But, I mean, it's really shaped everything from, like, in my life from that moment on. And I can look at it now, and it's just, you know, these things happen every day, all the time. People die, and people get divorced, and people get sick, and it's things that you can never run from or avoid. You know, you can't design your life in a way where bad things will never happen, because it's just, we don't have that control. And I think learning at a young age how to deal with that and having those experiences made me into this person now.
So what's your relationship with your mom and dad now?
It's good. I mean, my mom and I were really, really close. She visits a lot. She's been 4 weeks in Aruba the past month and a half or something like that. So she even has her own little apartment in our house where she stays when she comes. And I don't see my dad as much. We travel to Sweden a lot, and we always stay with him when we're there. But so it's, I mean, we're all close, and I have sisters that are still really young. So I think that's my one, not regret, but if I could choose, I would want to stay close to my sisters right now, because they're at that time where it's getting a little critical, where they need support. And I think having a big sister around is something I never had, and that I think it can be super valuable.
Yeah, definitely. But does it hurt to talk about your past?
Not anymore.
Because you've been dealing.
I mean, I've been talking about it a lot. Like, I think it's what's that quote? I think it's Paulo Coelho. He says, "So the more you speak of your own story, every time you say it, it's letting a piece of it go, and then in the end, you've said your story so many times that there is no emotional attachment anymore." And it's like something that happened to someone else, and that's the moment when you've actually, you know, moved on.
Is that what you feel?
I think so, really. I mean, there used to be times where I couldn't talk about this, like my stepdad dying and my mom trying to kill herself, all those things, like without crying or without closing up. It was really, really emotional. And now, I mean, I realized too that the more I speak of it, the more I help other people too, because these are things that people don't like to share. You know, you hold all your your heaviest pain you hold on to and you don't tell anybody. And then in the end, you end up kind of living this life with these patterns of maybe holding back or not truly living life because you're afraid of all these things coming to the surface. And then it changes you in a bad way as opposed to changing you in a good way.
So what would you say to little Rachel, mm-hmm. having all these feelings inside? And what would you say to her now, looking at this with these new eyes?
To not worry so much. And I mean, especially teenage Rachel, I was so worried about, you know, not being popular enough or not being pretty enough or not being thin enough, all these things. And if I could be a big sister to me as a teenager, I really would. I think just having one person to ground you and support you when you need it can make it's like life, change your life completely.
But it was your mom who changed mm-hmm. your life because she got enough.
Yeah.
She got enough. And what happened from that until now, like spiritually and all, that changed you?
Well, she had enough. It was like too much. And it was either kind of, I mean, it was at the point where either like, you know, I'd have to kind of move out. Like, you know, it's we couldn't really deal with it anymore. And we had a family friend who had been to this meditation kind of therapeutic retreat center. And then she had gone and she came back a much calmer version of herself. And then she said, you know what? Like, this is it. You're going to go. She paid for me and she gave me my train ticket. I didn't really have a choice, you know, but I mean, of course I had a choice. I could have just, you know, left home or ran away or whatever, but I actually went without objecting too much.
You maybe felt like, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I for sure there was a,
here. I need someone.
There was a part of me that really wanted to be happy, you know, and I never had that ever. So when I came there, I mean, I'd have no idea what I got myself into, like literally no clue. And I was so nervous going in the cab from the train station to the center that I actually asked the cab to stop and turn around. Like, I changed my mind. I have to go back to the train, like, you know, and he talked me into staying. And he said, you know, if it's really horrible, like, here's my number, call me tomorrow and I'll take you to the train. But like, try one day.
I love that cab driver.
Yeah, me too.
I read the book. I'm like, I want to have his number.
I know. Someone asked me, like, did you send a book to him? I'm like, I have no idea who he is. I don't know.
Because he had seen so many other people. He had.
It's a really small town, and that center has kind of a big, big place. I'm sure he'd taken a lot of people from the train there, and he knew, you know. So that was a big thing. But it wasn't really, I mean, it wasn't so much, it's hard to describe what happens at a retreat like that. Like, it's hard for me also to describe what happens at our retreats here. When I try to explain, like, it's not just yoga every day. It's not like just vinyasa classes every day, twice a day, but there's so much emotion and so much release and so much connection, and it can really change you, you know, but I'm not doing that work. It's the people that show up. I can give them tools to open up, but they have to do all the work. And same at that place, I was given tools to just kind of, well, first of all, realize all the things I was holding on to from my past that I didn't even know. I was like, that stuff was so long ago.
Yeah.
That doesn't affect me. I don't care about that. But, you know, of course it does. It stays with you forever or until you actively release. So for me, that was, dealing with that and then learning how to meditate, which for me at that time was really a way to turn off that evil voice inside of my head that told me I was never good enough, was a huge, huge part. And I think, yeah, meditation and just kind of managing that voice that tells you you're not, you know, you have to do better all the time, you have to look prettier all the time, is a huge step in starting to love yourself for who you really are. So when I came back, it wasn't like I was a new person or anything like that. I mean, I was still me, but I had a fresh eyes, you know, complete fresh look into what I wanted to do with life. And I really wanted to be happy, which was something I never thought about before, you know, happiness and balance and, like, you know, it really changed my life.
So what happened from there until you moved to Costa Rica? Like, how long was the gap between the moving and the coming back from the retreat?
I think the gap was maybe 6 or 8 months or something like that. And I was just in, before I came to Koh Samui here in Thailand, I was in Phuket with two of my oldest and best friends. And we were just talking about that right after we finished high school. They went to Verbier, to the Alps,
yeah,
for 6 months or however many months to be ski instructors and just kind of have a season there, which was the craziest time ever. And it was just 6 months of drinking and partying, and, you know, they have these stories. And I didn't go, and we were really best friends at that time. And I was like, why? why didn't I go to this huge trip? And they were like, well, that was the best choice you ever made. Like, you went to Costa Rica instead. And I was like, oh, yeah. Like, I was home and I was working, just trying to save up money.
What were you working with?
I think at that time, so I was waitressing a lot. And then my mom had a little company that I helped her with administrational, like, office work, too. So they went to that party trip and I stayed home saving up. And then I went to Costa Rica, which was a big, big change.
And then you worked there for, how long were you there before you moved to Aruba?
2.5, almost 3 years.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And worked there. I mean, the first year
I didn't really work. I didn't really do anything. It was just really excited to be in a place where, I mean, I felt really at home there in Sweden. I didn't have a community of people. I didn't have anybody that meditated, no one to talk to. Everybody that did that, they were 20 years older than me. There was, you know, all my friends were partying and going to the Alps and, you know, going out to clubs and that type of thing. And I lost that interest after I started that spiritual path. So Costa Rica was a place where I could, everywhere I went was a yoga studio or a meditation center or kind of people that were looking for the same things that I was. So I really arrived and I was like, I'm never going to go back. I'm going to stay here forever, which I did. I mean, I stayed for 2.5 years and then I went to Aruba just for vacation with my family, which is also totally random. And then I met Dennis there the second day.
It's crazy.
It's totally
insane. It's like written in the stars.
It is.
Yeah. And then... And now I know he's from Aruba, because that was one of my questions, but I met him and he said he's from there.
Yeah, I mean, he looks really Swedish or Dutch, but he's Aruban, yeah, all the way. His dad is Dutch, so that's where he gets his kind of blonde and tall handsomeness, but he's very Caribbean.
The story is like written in the stars story, but you also said like what you want will come true. You always need to ask for it, because in your book, you're saying like, you know, because you were working as a waitress there and you had like a horrible boss.
Yeah.
And then you were like, I'm quitting at the same time as you get offered a job.
Yeah. I mean, that kind of stuff has happened to me the past 6-7 years all the time. Like I have this ability to, that I really believe that nothing is impossible. And people ask me a lot, like, how could I change my life? And I've been working in the same job for 10 years or I've been in this horrible relationship forever. Like it can't just change your life. But the idea of changing your life comes from believing that you can. And if you believe that you can't, it's never going to happen.
But how do you ask for it then? Because I think you said like universe, you know, ask for it.
Yeah. I mean, people usually they have this idea of I want something different or I want to be happier or I want to change my life. But without actually knowing specifically what it is that you want, the universe can't really help you with that. So if you're not clear with your intention of what you want to create and you're just, I could do this and then that, or maybe this, I don't know. You're sending out this energy that's very confusing to the universe. And it's really hard to have those doors open for you if you don't know where you want to go. So I really believe in being super clear with your intentions and focusing maybe on one thing at a time and asking directly. And it's not sitting on your butt waiting for things to land in your lap. You have to, you know, have that intention really clear and then take the active steps that you can towards making that happen. And usually it means we don't know. I mean, we have no clue how we're going to get to the end destination, but just taking the first steps there and then the path will show itself. And I've learned from experience that's really how, I mean, it's how things work, like small and large, like this place where we're staying now. It was the day before we left to Koh Samui. And then it says, dude, where are we going to stay? And I was like, oh crap. I've been so immersed in my vacation here in Phuket. I didn't think about it. So before I went to bed, I sent a couple emails. We usually trade stays for social media and things like that with wellness resorts. And then an hour after I sent that out, I got just a random email from this place where we are that I had no idea who they were. And they were like, hi, we see you're traveling to Koh Samui in a few days for your retreat. Do you have a couple days before or after? We'd love to host you and have you visit. We have a new like detox program. And I was like, oh, sure. Great. So,
wow.
You know, it's really about aligning yourself and being on the right path in these things. If it's material things or emotional or relationships or whatever it is, it's not that hard. I think the hard thing is kind of getting over your mind and the negativity that comes from there.
If you think of like a yoga teacher, before you came along. No, but you thought of this like super spiritual own person, vegan, like weird hairdo or something like that. And looking at it that way, it didn't seem like yoga was for everyone. But looking at you, you know, you are this, you look like this normal girl, if I can say that, but very, really special, of course.
Very normal.
But you know, I get the feeling that you are just like me, or, you know, just like anyone else, and you kind of made yoga for everyone, and you practice it in such a beautiful way, and it really captures the people. Do you think you made yoga for everyone, or available for everyone, or necessary in this society that goes so fast?
Yeah, I mean, I think it, yoga really should be for everyone. And it's, especially in Europe, the idea of yoga is, it is a little bit more traditional. And even my view of a teacher, all the teachers I ever had when I started teaching was, they were older people and the classes were very, well, very stoic and very serious. And, you know, there was never any laughing or, you know, falling over was like, oh my God, no. And so when I started teaching, I had this idea that I had to be that person too. So I started off being very, very silent and this kind of, I was trying to become a person that I really wasn't, just to fit into this role of what I thought a teacher should be. But then I realized after a while that, you know, a really good teacher is a person that can use their own abilities and their own personality and then bring that into the class. So when I started kind of accepting and embracing, okay, well, actually what I really enjoy teaching is classes with really crazy music, and I'll play reggae and sometimes hip hop and then mix that with really traditional meditation music, and then we'll laugh and we'll fall over. And it's really about, I think the spiritual aspect of yoga is more accessible if you're enjoying what you're doing, as opposed to sitting on a cushion, you know, forcing yourself for hours on end to kind of, I don't know, to try something that feels so far away from the life that you're living. And I mean, I really think, I mean, for this retreat that we have now on Sunday, we have a guy who's like in his 60s. This is his second retreat in 2 months. You know, he lost 100 pounds within a year. He's this really big guy. And there's a bunch of girls for sure in Lululemon pants that just do power yoga. And there's going to be couples, and there's going to be everything in between too. And I really think that's what I want for these classes. I don't want only the fit young girl, you know, and I don't want only the, you know, I think it really should be for everyone. And just showing that the human side of being a teacher, showing that as opposed to hiding it, really allows people to just come to class without feeling so intimidated all the time.
But what do you think of the society today? Because when you talk about you being younger, I can feel with you about this pressure, about how you should look, you know, everything like that. And it's such an unhealthy way of thinking. And I also feel that it goes down in ages now. You know, I have heard a 10-year-old girl doesn't want to be in a bikini because she thinks she's too fat. Or like a 4-year-old girl doesn't want to get dressed at the beach because she doesn't want to show her body. I mean, it's sick. What do you think of this society?
I think it's really twisted. And it's I don't know if it's getting worse or if it's just more obvious now because we're so in each other's lives with social media and with that sort of thing. But I mean, I have four sisters and a stepsister, and they're all teenagers. They're from like 12, 13, 15, 17. And they're going through all of this right now. And I can really tell the transformation, you know, from being kind of 13, 14 is the roughest time. And it really decides where you go from there, if you're going to have your feet on the ground and if you're going to really have a good teenage time, or if you're going to go the other way, kind of like I did, and have a horrible time, and maybe, you know, take you years and years to fix that or to find who you really are. But when we were young, at least when I was a teenager, all the ideals I got of how I need to look or how I need to be or act, they came from magazines, they came from, you know, maybe movies, maybe commercials here and there. But that was that, you know, you still had these huge long breaks of being in school, listening to your teacher, or walking to the bus and sitting on the bus, maybe listening to music, you know, those moments in your day where you weren't being fed these images all the time. And then now, I mean, my sisters, they wake up and their phone is in their face, and they spend the entire day with their phone in their face, scrolling through Instagram and Facebook and feeds and Tumblr and, you know, YouTube videos and all these things. And it never ends. And they stay like that until they go to bed at night. And their phone is like right next to their head. So of course, if what you follow is these Victoria's Secret models and these kind of young pop stars and all these people that are not real. Of course, your image and your view of what life should be is going to be totally fucked up.
Yeah, true.
And I think it's so crucial that we fix that, you know, to mix that in. It's okay to have those phases sometimes. I mean, I have friends my own age that are like, oh my God, like Victoria's Secret models, that's like the hottest woman in the world. And I'm like, can't you be the hottest woman in the world? Like, what's great about you? Can you look at yourself and see that it's the same, you know? And being that person, you know, fitting yourself into this mold. I mean, what makes her happier? Probably not. Probably she's less happy than you are, you know, because she has that pressure and has to show her body all the time, every day. And you can relax and, you know, you maybe live a normal life, but we make it so difficult for ourselves to just be happy if we're never, ever, ever good enough. And doesn't matter. If you lose 10 pounds, there's always another 5, you know, same with everything. There's always the next step of changing who you are, as opposed to accepting and just embracing where you are now. And I think if you need to make changes, if it's health or weight related, or whatever it is, it's much easier to do from a place of love than from a place of fear.
So do you think you would have reached this balance in your life if you would have practiced yoga in Sweden? Because, I mean, Aruba and Sweden is two different
worlds.
Yeah. And, you know, Stockholm, where you're from, it's like pressure, pressure, pressure. If you walk down in, like, in Stockholm, it's a fashion show everywhere. Mm-hmm. You're like, what the fuck? I mean, you can't just relax. So do you think you would have, you know, reached this balance in Stockholm?
I don't know. I mean, I had to leave, like, when I was that age, and it was part of, I had people that told me, like, oh, you're running away, because they thought I was going to be away for a year, like a sabbatical, and then return to university, because that's what you do, what you're supposed to do. And then I didn't. And I was like, you know, I'm so happy here. I really could feel that, you know, I never wore makeup. I didn't have, you know, any proper clothing. I had a dog, and everything was sandy and dirty. And I was just so happy with not having that pressure. And then I even had friends my own age and parents and people telling me, like, you know, you're living this dream life. Like, when you come back to reality, you're going to see that you can't have a life that is like that. And my whole idea was, why not? If I feel like I'm not happy in this situation and I can change and go to a place where I can cultivate that acceptance or that strength, then I can return to that when I have to, and I'll be ready for it. You know, now I can go to Stockholm and I can feel totally fine. But it is a different vibe, for sure. It is a different vibe of, you know, going into like a Stureplan in Stockholm or one of these nice restaurants. And it's really the feeling of being judged is there because everybody is judging themselves. And it's not about other people looking at you feeling like, oh, look at her. It's them looking at themselves, you know, and it creates such a self-conscious vibration in the whole city, and you feel that. So I really think it's hard. And I think if you have to change something up and change your routine or change your pattern or change your country, then do that. Why not? I mean, you can always come back to where you are if you want to, but I think the more we explore and the more we try different things, the easier to find our real path.
You know, training at the gym or at a gym class and having this, you know, gym teacher screaming at you, you know, faster, harder, you know, no pain, no gain. You're like, ah! you get so stressful from that. And I mean, like you said, with the Victoria's Secret model, she has a body that people look up to instead of looking at their own body and liking that body. But I mean, even though you have a six pack, you might be miserable in yourself,
well, and it will probably,
and it will show. Yeah, but how is yoga different from that? How does it, you know, creates this balance and feeling of acceptance?
Well, I think the main thing is that nothing is permanent, and especially the body. So if you've worked your ass off and you have that six pack, you know, it's not going to last unless you keep working your ass off all the time, which probably means every time you fall off the wagon or every time you miss a workout or you have a dessert, you're going to feel miserable. And I think yoga as a form of exercise, but also as a lifestyle, has a much more loving approach. You know, one kind of the foundation of yoga is that everything will always change. And it's about adapting to the pose or to the transition of where you are and learning how to step into that kind of uncomfortable moment as opposed to running away from it. So, I mean, it's kind of dealing with the breath and using the present moment to your advantage as opposed to trying to run away. Like maybe you're on the treadmill and you're listening to music or you're watching TV and you're trying to distract your mind the whole time because what you're doing is fucking boring.
Yep.
And you're having a miserable time on that treadmill. You know, in yoga, we do it the other way around. So you use your breath and you really anchor yourself where you are, even if that place, I mean, doing a tough vinyasa class can be super, 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 I mean, it can be horrible. It can be like you're sweating and you can't keep up and what's happening, you know, but always trying to distract from where you are is always going to take you to the next place. And that place is always going to be in your mind and not in your body. And with the breath and feeling where you are, it's such a relief from that, you know, the constant thoughts and judgments and labels from the mind. And it just gives you a little break to feel what it's like to be here and moving into what the body can do for you as opposed to what the body needs to look like in the mirror. And then using that with, you know, I mean, it can be a really, you can have a great body if that's what you want just doing yoga. You totally can. But I don't think that's, whatever gets you to the mat is great, but it's not the point of why we're there. You know, you'll realize really quickly that the point is how you feel afterwards or maybe even during or finding a space of calm or opening up parts of the body that have been really stuck. You know, it's really common to come to the mat and cry or feel this.
Yeah,
release.
What happens there? I mean, when you open up those things in your body.
Yeah.
What is it? What's going on there?
So the body has a way of, so whenever we have a rough time in our lives or we have a crisis or a trauma or, you know, it could be small or big things. If we don't know or we don't have the tools to actively release and kind of work through it, the body will hold on instead. That emotion, that pain or that fear or sadness or grief or whatever it is, it's going to get stuck somewhere in the body. And it's usually hips, it could be hamstrings, back of the legs, shoulders, neck, other parts. And then when we start to get really into those poses, maybe when we have longer holds and you know, in yoga, it's like if you're trying to push your way somewhere, like in CrossFit or treadmill, you push, push, push and you go. In yoga, if you're trying to push something that isn't happening, you're not going to go anywhere. But it's in the moment when you let go and you stop, that's when you have this huge progress and you can really feel how, wow, you know, there was a huge change there. And when getting into those poses where we hold that old emotion, that old tightness that's stuck, it releases through the body and we cry and the emotion kind of can come out. And that's when we feel all these things. And it's important to allow yourself to cry when you need to and to not hold back. And I mean, Dennis will tell me a lot, like, he's like, you feel like you didn't have a good class if no one cried, which is not true at all. I mean, for sure, we have fun and lighthearted classes too, but I think it's a great thing to be able to bring that out in someone and for them to go that deep into their own journey that they can actually work on old stuff because it makes you lighter.
Yeah, definitely. After a cry, you're like,
it's
so released. Yeah, definitely. But you talk about yoga, that it helps you in some situation not to react on situations with influences from the past. How does yoga do that? Because I think a lot of people need to have
a lot of
in
people
life,
need that.
You know, looking back and like, you know, being mad at something that's not so big actually.
Yeah, I mean, it happens all the time. But I mean, yoga is just the path of getting there. There's, I mean, everybody has different ways, but I think it keeps coming back to the ability to stay present with where you are. So if you're always living, I mean, the mind is really neurotic, like really anxious and totally insecure all the time. So if you listen to everything that happens in your head, usually it's the same type of repetitive thoughts every day. And usually it's about the past or about, it's like regret from the past or anxiety about the future, or it's something that always should be different. Like very, very rarely do you have your mind tell you like, oh, I'm so content. Like never. I mean, that never happens because it's not how the mind works. You know, the mind really needs that continuous problem to work on, to improve, which can be good, you know, for solving problems and for creativity and stuff like that. But it creates this neurotic society and this insecurity in us that's really hard to get away from. And learning how to get away from that voice and just being present with where you are. If that's like we are sitting in this kind of air-conditioned room and we're sitting on this pillow and just feeling the breath or the clothes on your body or the sounds you hear, it's super simple things, but it allows that the chatter of the mind to kind of move aside a little bit. And when we're in the mind and we have something happen, like it could be gossip, like he said this about you and you're like, oh my God, how could he? Like, and you know, it's immediately like that's a reflection of us not being good enough, you know, as opposed to being present, seeing, hey, I'm still sitting on this cushion here. Nothing changed in my moment. I was happy 5 seconds ago. Nothing changed where I am, like physically in this moment, everything is exactly the same, aside from this reaction that I just had to something that someone said to me, which I have no idea if it's even true. One, number one. Number two, how does that affect my own self-worth? Like, how is something so simple, someone gossiping about you or saying something mean about you, how can that be more important than me enjoying this moment? Like, that can take over our entire day and just ruin our days completely, and we obsess over it, and we gossip about other people in return, and we have to call this person, and why were you saying that? You know, it's just like, it's just words, and it's the mind always reflecting that we don't think that we are good enough. So everything we hear, we perceive that in a negative way. And the practice of yoga, the practice of being present with where you are, it's like it allows a little bit of space between the things that come and how we perceive it. You know, you have a little bit more time between having to react right away, freak out right away, to maybe realize, like, hey, you know what? That's none of my business. Like, what that person thinks about me right now, it's not none of my business. I don't have to let that affect my entire moment right now, but I can stay here and still be content.
Wow. I'm like sitting here forgetting the next question. Wow.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Let's talk a little bit about fear, because you were afraid of talking in front of people.
Mm-hmm.
And now you challenged it, and now you're here. And a lot of people have like dreams and fear, but fear becomes bigger than the dreams. And you said something beautiful. If you're not even a little bit scared of it, you're not... No, if you're not even a little bit... Okay, I'm saying it again. If you're not even a little bit scared of what you're getting yourself into, it's not worth it. Can mm-hmm. you say it?
Yeah, I mean, if it doesn't scare you, it's not worth doing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Were you scared of having this interview? Is that why you did it?
Of course. Everything I do. I mean, on a daily basis, it's like, but then in the end, I mean, you end up doing something so many times. Like I used to be really nervous about being on TV, and then I did that 15 times in 3 months, and now it's like, big deal. Like, you know, probably more people see my stuff on Instagram every day than people that watch that TV show. It's just an idea in your head. But yeah, I was having this conversation with a friend of mine just 2 days ago, that finding the balance between being content in the moment and allowing yourself to enjoy where you are and still pushing yourself to grow. Because if you're always just content, you're going to stay where you are. You're not going to go anywhere. So, you know, that feeling of being content is going to probably transform into a feeling of being stagnant and being stuck. And then pushing yourself enough that you keep growing and you keep learning and kind of overcoming these fears without feeling that you have to constantly push yourself and not being good enough. You know, so it really is a fine line. But I think every time we have that little voice like, oh, this is scary, I think that's really a good sign that this
definitely
is important. You know,
definitely.
This is something that's worth doing, if it's speaking in front of a crowd or trying something new or, you know, going to school or, you know, whatever it is to pursue that.
Yeah, do it.
Do it, yeah.
What does silence mean to you?
It's more rare these days than it used to be. I mean, when I was living in Costa Rica before I moved to Aruba, I didn't have a phone. I didn't have a computer. I didn't have...
I'm like jealous.
Yeah.
Oh, so nice. Because a lot of people, you know, they can't handle when it's quiet.
Mm-mm.
They need their phone. They need the TV on. They need the computer on. What do you think of that? Something is unbalanced there in their life.
Yeah. I mean, usually it's avoiding the present moment. So it's avoiding the mind. And if you shut everything off and you're all alone and there's nothing there, like, what's actually going on inside of your head? Or what emotions are you running from? And for some people, that means, you know, you create this whole identity of this is who I am, that maybe doesn't fit with who you actually want to be or who you actually are. And then when you peel all the layers off, you're faced with this person that you don't even like. That's terrifying. I mean, terrifying. So you numb that with TV or with alcohol or with phones or with distractions all the time. And in the end, I think you end up getting really, really exhausted and you can't run away from it forever. So I think learning to be just silent with yourself, if it's, you know, meditating for 5 minutes in the morning or if it's practicing yoga or if it's just really shutting off, you know, just really turning everything off and just not have a plan with what happens in that hour, it's crucial. But not easy.
Not easy at all. Almost, I think a year ago, something happened to you that I think every friend fears of going through. And I've been through it. I lost a friend. Mm-hmm. And it was about 4 years ago. And you lost your best friend.
Mm-hmm.
How long was it ago?
In almost exactly a month. It's a year.
It's a year.
Yeah, 11 months ago.
How do you feel now, a year after?
I mean, nothing has really healed. I don't think that's how it works. I think the first months and the first year is just about surviving, you know, what's happened. And I think, I mean, I can talk about it easier now, and it's definitely a part of my, you know, my teaching yoga and my connecting with other people. Everybody knows that this
What happened?
She died in a car crash.
Her name was Andrea.
Andrea, yeah. She died in a car crash, but it was the same exact moment that my appendix, burst in my stomach, but I didn't know. And I was in the middle of traveling, and I was still in Aruba, and I was at the airport, and it was literally like someone stabbed me in the stomach. And I never, ever had any stomach issues my whole life, so I didn't know what it was. I didn't know, you know, what level of pain is kind of accepted. So I really was thought that I had like horrible heartburn or gas or something. And I kept traveling, you know, and it just got worse and worse and worse. And it was really, really odd because Dennis was there and we had our assistant there and our little dog Ringo was there and we're going to this retreat that was supposed to start the next day. And I had to go to the hospital and I had to have surgery, and it was really divine timing, because I think if I'd been home, I would have flown to Costa Rica right away. And I would have, you know, like, that's my way. I would have taken charge of the funeral and taken care of her mom and, like, done all these things. And now I was in a hospital bed and I couldn't do anything except feel everything, which was terrible, but probably very good.
And you woke up from, did they do an operation on you?
Yeah, I had
surgery.
So
you woke up from the operation and you got the...
Yeah. I mean, when I was like in the kind of morphine haze the night before, because it took a really long time for them to do the surgery on me, one of my other best friends from Costa Rica called, and it was really late at night, this our time. And I was like, this is so strange. It was like 11 p.m. And I'm like, and Dennis was like, Luigi's calling. And I was like, Luigi, like, how does he know that I had surgery? Because I assumed that I'm going to have surgery, that I'm in the hospital. So I picked up and I was like, hey, don't worry, like, don't worry. I was really high on morphine, but I was like, no, it's okay. Like, the pain just went away, because it was the first time that the pain stopped in all those hours, like 9 hours. And he was like, what? What do you mean? Hospital, what do you mean? And I'm like, I'm in the hospital. Isn't that where you're calling to check on me? He's like, no, like, Andrea had an accident. And then I knew at that moment. But I'm like, I can't hear you. And I was like, Dennis, take the phone. And I gave Dennis the phone, and Dennis went outside. And then I woke up in the middle of the night, like hours later, I think, and Dennis was crying by my bed, and he never cries. So, I mean, they told me the next day, but I mean, I knew that whole time. I knew.
Oh, it makes me so sad.
It's horrible.
But you couldn't do yoga because of your appendix or appendicitis.
I couldn't move. I mean, I couldn't get out of the bed. I couldn't go to the bathroom on my own. I couldn't. Like, Dennis had to wash my hair. Like, I couldn't do anything.
But how was it, how could you handle that, you know, not able to do your thing, your yoga, having that your friend just passed away, to deal with those two things? Because, I mean, I don't know what you would have done, but maybe, you know, if you're doing your yoga, you meditate, you think of it, you release.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe you can do it just lying down, because isn't that yoga too? Just
no, I mean, I think in that instant, like, anything can become an escape, you know. Even the things we label like good, like exercising or doing yoga, even meditation, it can be an escape. The same way that, okay, there's something happening, we don't want to feel it or think about it or be in it, so we go, we eat a whole box of chocolate, or we go, you know, drink a whole bottle of wine, or we do drugs, or we party, or we, you know, distract ourselves in many ways. And yoga can be a distraction in the same way. Like, I'm going to go to class and I'm going to just do this now, and I know what to do here. And it's a way of taking control, kind of. And I think in that moment, it was a good thing that I didn't have anything, because I was faced with that pain and I had nowhere to go. Like, I had nowhere to hide. I was just lying in this bed. I couldn't go for a walk. I couldn't, you know, I couldn't do anything to relieve my suffering, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Which I think made me, I think when you have that sort of traumatic experience, you can either dose it out in little portions over a very, very long time, like over maybe years. And then, or you can go through it really extremely intensely all at once, and you're going to heal faster. And I think for me, that was a reason to why I can talk about it now. You know, it's not okay. I mean, it's never going to be okay ever, but it's not, it didn't kill me, and it won't, you know. And for some people, it's too much. Like, you can't handle it. Like my mom, she's the type of person, she can't, when a grief or pain hits, she can't handle it.
But is yoga also, you know, gearing up for these things happening? Like, you know, because I think in your book it says, like, think of where you are with everything if you don't have it. Like, you know, think of everything you have without having it. Or I don't know how to say it now in English, but do you somehow with yoga gear up for things to be able to handle it?
I mean, I think having your feet on the ground really helps, and being able to, like we talked about before, being able to come back to the body and to the, even in crises, like even in a moment like that where, like, you're still here, you know? Your mind can take you to a place where this is the end of the world. Like, how are you ever going to survive? How are you ever going to live another day? Like, it's not possible. How can you live with a pain like this? But you can still feel that you're here, and you can feel your heart beating and your breath is here. And it's a really good anchor to have, to not spin into this rolling negative cycle of grief, because for some people it's really hard to get out of it.
I saw some months ago, I couldn't find it now through all of your Instagram pictures, but I think it was a picture of you and Andrea, or how do you say it?
Andrea. Yeah.
Andrea, having the same dress. Mm-hmm. And it was on someone's birthday.
Her birthday. We had just been to Envision Festival, which is this festival. After Thailand, I go straight to that festival, actually.
Okay.
And we had a whole entire week, just her and me at this festival, like, living together. And, you know, we see each other just, like, a couple times a year, 5-6 times a year, something like that. So it's not, like, an everyday, like, I don't see her every day. So we had a really, really good, really, really nice last trip. But the time before that was a month and a half before that I was in Costa Rica last. And then, yeah, she had her birthday, and I bought her a dress, but I loved the dress so much I had to buy myself one too. So we had two, and then, yeah, now they both hang in my closet, which is really strange.
But you also said, you know, letting go means releasing the pain, not the love, which is really important, I think, for people to understand.
It's really hard. I mean, still, I'm still coming to terms with that idea. And I know when people go through pain and loss, especially death, we cling to these material things like memories or like those dresses I have in my closet or pictures or letters or whatever it is. And I mean, I think the idea of letting that go, like the idea of not clinging to, like the idea for me to like, I have so much of her clothes now, to throw that away, it's like, that's never going to happen, ever. But I have another friend, like Luigi, my other, one of my best friends or our best friends, he's really like, no, like he right away, like, no, I want to get rid of all of this stuff. Like I can't look at these things all the time, every day and still live. Like it doesn't, you know, doesn't work that way. So I think for me, learning that it's okay to let go of that, you know, all those pictures and all those things and not look at them all the time, it doesn't change anything, you know? It's still like the love and the memories will still be there, but you put them in these material things and then you cling, and that's not healthy. I mean, I've learned that, but I mean, it takes a long time. Like my mom has a huge box, like a massive box of things from my stepdad who died, and it was 21 years ago. And I mean, that's probably going to be there forever.
Forever. Yeah.
But it's an important part of learning how to let go of those things, to stop clinging to something that's no longer present, you know, in your regular physical life.
Oh gosh. Do you practice yoga like 100%? Because it's 8 ways of practicing it, right? Like 8
types. Limbs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you do all of them, or how does that work? Do you need to do all of them to be a yogi?
No, I think that whole idea that you have to be this or that to be a yogi, I think that's, we should get rid of that. I think you can be who yourself and whatever that is, and then fit yoga into your life and to the extent that it works for you. And usually in the beginning, it's only the physical classes, you know, it's only the asana, it's only the, usually vinyasa or power yoga or ashtanga, the physical, you know, part of the practice. But then the more we practice, the more we figure out that there's space for all these other limbs to enter as well. And if it's beginning with meditation, or if it's cleanliness, or if it's contemplation, like there is definitely room for all of it in every person's life. But I think it can be very overwhelming and complicated to start with the idea that yoga is this huge thing, you know, and it puts people off. It makes people, no, I couldn't do yoga. Like I'm not a spiritual person, but it's okay. You know, everybody is a spiritual person. Maybe you just won't know it until you try yoga. So we have people that come to class, I just want to learn how to handstand. That's okay. Like, I'm never going to judge that, because that's a great way to start. And then once you get into it and you're practicing for a while, all these other benefits are going to come, and you're going to realize like handstand is like minuscule thing here. You know, it doesn't matter at all. But however you start, it doesn't matter. It's just as long as you get to the mat, I think it's good.
You have so many followers on your social medias, and this also make big companies want to come into your life and make you as a front person. And you had said no to big deals as like Nike, which is, you know, athletes' biggest dream almost, some of them. Is it hard to be true to yourself when you, you know, are under these big companies? Or why did you say no?
I don't know. I still struggle with this. I mean, sometimes, because it is, like, I don't want to judge anybody else. Like, of course, if you can make money from a social media account, I mean, go ahead. There's lots of different ways. For me and Dennis, my point was always to have people come to class so that they can practice with me, if it's in workshops or retreats or whatever it is, because that's where the real connection lies. So that's been the most important part for me. And we're lucky enough that we can live off of that in our entire, you know, we're fine just doing that. So I was in a position where I could say no. You know, we don't need $1 million. Like it's, you know, we have really good lives as they are. And I got a little bit of a backlash in the yoga community from other people, got really offended that I said that I don't want to do these types of endorsements because other people do. And then they don't like that I didn't, because it was like I'm better than them or something, which is not at all my intention of what I wanted to do. But I feel like, especially since I'm so personal with the community there, that's starting to push yoga pants down people's throats, or like, here, use it. Every post was like, here's some wisdom that I meditated on and I'm sharing with you. And by the way, use this code, go on Nike.com and get 15% on these yoga pants.
Yeah.
It doesn't really go together with what I want to do with it. I can say that. But I mean, I'm opening up more to the idea of working with bigger brands that feel right. Like now we're in the process of starting our own charity organization, for instance, and that needs funding. Like we need money. So for the first time now, I'm in a place where like, okay, if we can get extra funding to fund this project, then we should take it. And if that means collaborating with other businesses or whatever, like I'm more open to that. It just has to be done very carefully, I think, so that there's still love in that. And so that I don't like the idea of being dishonest to my followers, of pretending like it's not commercial when it is. Mm-hmm. I would rather want to say like, hey guys, like tomorrow at 2 p.m. there's going to be a commercial. And it's going to be from, I don't care if it's Coca-Cola or Nike or like a tiny little business, whatever. But they are paying us X amount of dollars for this and we're doing good things with that. So please interact, like it, share it.
Yeah.
And I think being able to share that is going to make people, it's like more, it's a more honest way of doing advertising as opposed to like just casually showing the logo of my yoga pants as I'm, you know, doing this post. I mean, it doesn't feel true to me.
But also, you know, you need to keep true to yourself. And I know you had some difficulties while you were, you know, in this whole traveling thing and you kind of forget about your own health because you woke up one day and had back pain.
Yeah.
Isn't that true?
That is true.
How do you now, you know, focus more on yourself?
I mean, that's been a really big learning process. It's really hard, especially when everything you do is so much fun. And it's connecting with beautiful people. I mean, it's like, not like I sit in front of a computer or at a desk 9 to 5, but it's really, what I do is so much fun that it's sometimes hard for me to say no. So I started saying yes to everything and traveling so much. And it was just too much for my own body to handle in a way. So for me now, like I really decided for this year, we're still going to travel. Like I can't stop that. Last year we had 40 travel weeks, which is crazy and not wow. at all fun, like not part of like the I love traveling thing. It was way too much. And for this year to not turn into this, like last year I felt like I was constantly trying to keep up with my own life. Like it was moving too fast and I never felt like I was in control of the direction that we're going. So I really decided for this year, like it's not going to be that way. We're going to really be in charge and cut down on as much travel as we can. And I realized for me to stay really healthy, like I need body work done at least like once or twice a week, which means I need acupuncture and a massage because I work with my body all the time. And last year I was like, no, you know, that's so expensive. And, you know, it's like a luxury thing to get massage twice a week. And then now I realize, okay, well, I spend a lot of money on other things, like maybe, you know, buying a pair of shoes or eating out a lot. I could cut that down and then make sure I have someone taking care of me twice a week. And then that's way, way, way more worth it.
Yeah, and then you taking care of someone else.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you can't do that if you're not taking care of yourself. So sometimes that means that when we travel now, I look up local teachers in the places where we go, and I actually ask people to come to where we are for private classes. Because sometimes it's just really, when you're exhausted and tired and you're traveling a lot, sometimes directing yourself on the mat, which is what I do all the time, is just tiring. You just want another person to tell you what to do so you can just completely relax. So those are kind of luxuries that I've allowed myself or made sure of this year that are gonna help keep me healthy.
But how many people are behind Yoga Girl? Do you have like a manager? Because you have so much to do, so you can't do everything by yourself.
No, I cannot. I try, but I can't. I mean, Dennis helps me a ton. He does most of the behind the scenes stuff, like all the finances and that kind of logistics behind everything. And then we have a really great assistant, Amelie, who handles the day-to-day kind of emails and planning and coordination and such. And then I have an agent who's amazing, who helps with, like, when we get that sort of request, for instance, you know, when it comes to Nike or whatever it is, other brands, and they come in every day all the time. And some of it is great and some of it is horrible. And it's nice to have a person who really knows the business. And he's such a yogi at heart. Like he's really like, we say no to almost everything. And I've never felt like now, for instance, I'm going to release my first ever online, like real produced yoga classes, which I've never done.
Oh.
Because I felt every company that we were in, you know, I mean, everybody reached out, but it didn't feel good. I don't know why. And he can always tell, like, I don't know, for some reason, this doesn't feel good, but you tell me. And I'm like, no, it doesn't feel good.
Okay.
And now we have our first collaboration with a company called Gayam, which is really, really nice, like full of heart and just really resonates with our vibe too. So he helps with that stuff, which is super valuable. But I mean, there's not like a 20 people behind the girl.
An entourage.
Ringo does a lot too. He like answers emails and
spreads the love. When you smile, you really smile, you know, with your whole body. You can totally see that you're, you know, because a smile is not always a smile. You know, you can be like, you know, the American smile
that's the camera happy. Smile.
Yeah, exactly. But what is it that made you happy? Is it the yoga, or is it that you find love, or the fact that you live in Aruba?
I mean, I think just living your passion. And for me, I mean, yoga is not everything. Yoga is just I'm feeling that more and more. It's I don't think my whole life purpose is only yoga. Like I never felt that. Yoga is a way for me to share with people, you know, but I really feel that, especially since last year with all the pain and the loss and all the stuff that happened, it's really changed my whole view of why I'm here. You know, I feel like I'm here to write. I'm here to connect with people and maybe help people deal with their pain, you know. And that's, yoga is a really great way of doing that. But I think there's a lot more that can be explored there. And living that and being able to do that every day and just meeting these amazingly brave people that make an effort to come to class or just to come give me a hug or to, you know, it's just like we meet amazing people every day, like you came all the way here. And I mean, it makes it easy to be happy every day. But also I think allowing yourself to be really sad when you're really sad is a huge part of finding that real happiness.
What does material stuff mean to you? Because we live in a material world.
And we live in a very material world, yeah. I mean, people send me things all the time, which is strange. I mean, it's like a blogger thing, I guess, or social media thing. It's not a yoga thing, that's for sure. But everybody wants their products showcased. And even though we have like a standard reply where like, Rachel does not endorse anything. Like, I don't share anything on social media. I never, almost never tag or hashtag stuff. And still, you know, people send crazy amounts of stuff. I had all of my sisters in Aruba over Christmas, and I gave away like half of my leggings and half of my wardrobe. I was just like, take everything.
Oh, wow.
They were super excited. But I mean, it's really hard because it's easy to get stuck in that sort of thing. You know, like this is the most important thing ever. But also, I think it's totally okay to like shoes and to like shopping and to like fashion, or, you know, it doesn't mean that it's a bad thing. Everybody has different passions, and I think you can combine that. It all just comes back to the intention of why you're there. If it's to feed your own ego or to, you know, you can see that in someone's, if it's a blog or online or so, you can feel it right away. If this is a like ego reflected or insecurity reflected, or if it's just genuine, like, I like fashion, it's my thing.
Yeah.
You know, and I think in yoga, there's a little bit of a, you know, stigma to it because you're not supposed to enjoy the material things, but everybody does. I mean, unless you're in Nepal on some mountain alone, living in a hut with no belongings, like everybody to some extent enjoys material things. If it's having a nice house or, you know, like clothes or just the ability to, you know, drink a good cup of tea and watch a movie, those are all the material things. So I think finding that balance is important.
And what does your tattoos mean? You have a tattoo from when you were younger.
I do, in my neck. I actually got it in Hong Kong, which is not so far away from where we are now, and I wasn't even 15.
Wow.
Then, yeah.
Your mom and dad was not
happy.
Oh
God, they were so
horrified.
What
is it that you have in your neck?
Actually, I found out later, like it looks like a little sun almost. Mm-hmm. I just like the symbol. It was the tail of a dragon,
uh-huh.
And then the artist redrew it for me. And my Chinese astrology sign is a dragon. So I really like that. And then afterwards, like years after, someone was like, oh my God, like that's the symbol of life force. And then I started like researching, and it's also a symbol of life force.
So wow.
I could have ended up with like a symbol for penis or something.
Yeah.
Because I was so young, I didn't care. I just wanted a tattoo. So I guess I'm a little lucky in that way. But then I have the faces of the moon on my right arm for my soul sister who passed away. And then on my other arm, it says, I believe in the good things coming, like wrapped around, which is also a part of it's from a song. It's a really big part of my healing process. And I have this one that no one really knows. It's little dots on the side of my wrist, but they were always covered by bracelets.
Yeah, which you just cut off.
Which I just cut them all off. So now everybody's like, oh my God, you have this tattoo. It's one dot for each one of my sisters and brothers. It's like a little constellation.
It's pretty.
It is, right? My sister has one too. Yeah, it's really nice.
Wow.
I like it.
Nice. You know, a lot of young girls and boys, they do feel insecure and living this destructive life, and just like you were, but you found your thing. But everyone doesn't found their thing, and everyone don't want to listen to people. what would you say to them?
I mean, I think we have to try everything. I mean, not everything, but I think...
Not everything.
But it's important to try different paths and to not be scared of leaving things, you know? Sometimes we start out and if it's, oh, you went to law school, and then it's like, you have to be a lawyer because you went to law school. And of course, it's a huge pressure and spent all that money in school and all that time. And then maybe you realize you don't want to be a lawyer. And learning to let go of our old ideas of what we have to do, it's a scary thing, but it's important when it comes to finding our own path. Like, I mean, like my sister now, she's an amazing singer, but she's like, I have so much to learn and it's not perfect and there are way better other singers out there. And I'm like, well, who gives a shit? Like, give it a try. Like, put yourself out there. I'm like, I'll support you. You know,
we saw that the other day.
We got a ton of emails from people with tips and
people
with connections and this and that. And I said, you know, if it doesn't work out, at least you'll never spend the rest of your life wondering,
could I have
made it as a singer? You know, and maybe on the way to that dream, you get lost and you find another dream and you realize this is what I want to do.
Yeah. Another door opens.
So,
but you get many emails from girls and boys, probably. Mm-hmm. But what's the most common thing they say?
Wow, there's so many of them. I mean, I think one of the most common ones is like, how did you start living your dream? People really want to, you know, they see this life and it's yoga and travel and it's like, oh my God. And, you know, they know it's not perfect because I share all the non-perfect stuff too, but just because this was my path doesn't mean it's everyone's. Like, I've had to be cautious a little bit. We get really young girls to come to retreats. They're 17, 18. And they're like, you know, I'm not going to go to school because you didn't go to school. And I'm just going to travel. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, holy shit, wait, hold up. Uh-huh. like, your parents must hate me. You know, I'm not ever going to sit here and tell people to not go to school. Like, absolutely not. You know, so sometimes I have to it's happened more than once that I've had to have these really serious discussions with young girls saying, you know, I was incredibly lucky with this, and the point was not to follow my steps with this. The point is to follow your own dream, and everybody has their own thing. And whether that is, you know, going to school or starting a family or trying your own career idea or whatever it is. And I mean, for so many people, that's not going to come until you've found some peace in who you are. And if you're 18 and you're totally insecure and you feel like, I don't know what I'm going to do, I mean, it's really hard to find your path from there. You know, you have to focus on first loving who you are and being really comfortable in your own skin. And that opens a lot of doors.
So in every podcast, the person I'm interviewing now needs to ask a question to the next person I'm interviewing. Mm-hmm. But you don't know who that is.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So last time I interviewed Victoria Silvstedt.
Uh-huh.
And her question was, do you hate anyone?
Wow, that's a rough question. Holy crap. No. I mean, I'm like, can I think of something? No, I mean, no. I really, really don't. I think we have these discussions in class sometimes where, you know, what about Hitler? Or what about, like, Osama bin Laden? Or whatever. And I think it's really important to realize that all these things, if it's evil or people doing you wrong or whatever it is, the worst thing that comes from that is when a whole society focuses only on the fear that brings. You know, you can have one really bad person that probably wasn't born bad. You know, that probably had a horrible life and horrible life experiences. Like, no one is born to be a Hitler. You know, like, something really messed up happens in that person's life that brings about a situation like that, clearly. But having something like that happen, if it's a terror attack or whatever happens these days, and then the entire society responds with fear and hate and retribution and revenge, and then media starts feeding all of us with this fear, and that's the problem. You know, you can have an isolated incident where someone bad does something horrible, and you can move forward from that and start to heal, or you can spin into this cycle of more fear and more hate that's going to probably generate more attacks and more horrible things. I mean, I really wish there was a popular news channel that only talked about good news. We never get good news. So many good things happen every day. Like, miracles happen all the time. Amazing stories, amazing things. No one talks about them. There's no CNN, you know, reporting
CNN
on like...
CNN happy.
CNN happy.
Let's start it.
Reporting on like family reunions or people overcoming cancer or like, you know, people like overcoming these horrible things or just living happy lives. Like, there's nothing like that. So we're fed these images of hate and war, as opposed to being fed these images of healing and love. So I think hating someone, like, no, I don't hate hate anyone.
So what's your question for the next person?
And I don't know who it is.
No.
Okay, wait, let me think about this. If you weren't fearful, what would you do?
Good. Good question.
Good one.
Good one. We wrapped up the interview.
Yay!
And now we can talk Swedish.
Now we can talk Swedish.
Oh, shit, pommes.
Efter lite rädsla och svett.
Rädsla och svett. Så blev vi klara.
So, if you weren't fearful, what would you do? I hope you enjoy listening to this podcast. If you want to know who I am, you can follow me on the podcast Instagram page.
Opodden. It's spelled
O-P-O-D-D-E-N. Then you will also get more information if I send out another podcast in English. Next episode will be out next week, but this will be in Swedish.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.